Breaking In Again, a new media panel discussion recorded at the Writers Guild of America, September 9, 2008. Your host is Bill Taub. For more information, visit newmediainterchange.com. Due to technical difficulties, our final speaker of the evening, Mark Scott Zachary, was not recorded. You can find out more about Mark at zachary.com, Z-I-C-R-E-E.com.
This whole thing really, for me, is an outgrowth of the strike. I know what strike you're saying, but it was an outgrowth of the strike where all our attention suddenly were focused on this thing called new media. And it was around. Several people were working in it, such as Doug and others. But yet, a lot of us were not really aware of what to do with it, what it was about. Webisodes, podcasts, videocasts. And I felt that it was really important that writers need to keep reinventing themselves. So, as we call it, breaking in again, or breaking in again, or breaking in not again. It could be anything. Unless you're an A-lister, you don't have to worry about such things. Now, how many in this room are A-listers? I think that's just Doug. But so I really felt that I had seen a lot of seminars and discussions about, you know, monetizing the web and distribution on the web and all that kind of stuff. And for me, being a novice as I was in terms of creating, I said, I don't know how to create anything for the web. So I wanted to go back to step one, which is we are writers. We are the first link in the chain. So therefore, we should really focus our intention in building the table before we worry about selling it or distributing it. And it could be simple. The technology has changed so fast that the portability of it, the inexpensiveness of it, has really helped. And the way I look at this, it transcends just the web. I mean, as I say, we have to find new ways to bring attention to ourselves, give exposure to ourselves. It's more than just writing a script and then sending it in to your agent and hoping it gets seen. And for instance, like we were talking about, like if you're doing a screenplay reading, you're a feature writer, well, why don't you video it and make a trailer out of it or a teaser out of it? Because the cameras, or you'll see, we'll show you later, because we're going to go through a hands-on thing later where cameras are the size of cigarette packs and you edit them on a computer. So we wanted to really introduce everybody to what it would be like and what some of the technology is to help you give yourself some recognition and create new projects. We have different capacities down here, and they're all going to go through a demonstration. This is a three-act structure. First part, the way it's designed, is going to be these people are going to talk about what their projects are, things like Strike TV, Mark at the End worked with a real franchise, regular Star Trek, these people are doing podcasts. I did one a project, but I won't do my project unless these people are, you know, run out of time. And then the second part of the evening, act two, I want to split you up into small groups. Each one of these people will take you and give you a hands-on experience working with the technology, whether it be the cameras, the computers, the software, whatever. And act three, which is my favorite, is cookies. So we can figure that this should be a fun evening, an informational evening, and hopefully you will get an overview. And if this works, we'll do more of these things and go deeper into it. But I wanted to start by saying that last week, I don't know if anybody read, the New York Times had two articles in two consecutive days about the internet and webisodes and how it's really a shot in the dark. Nobody knows what they're really doing. And wherever you get on the train now, there's nobody that's too far ahead of you. So you might as well do what you want. And these people, Roseanne and Doug, I'll announce them as we go down the line. I just took the podcast course from them at UCLA. And Doug, what is it, 12 years or 17 years? You've been working on podcasts before there were tape recorders. What are you?
I'm approaching my fifth anniversary.
Fifth anniversary of podcasting. Now, I innocently entered this course thinking that a podcast was something that was audio. It's not. Doug and Roseanne will fill you in on what it is. Ken is going to talk on Strike TV and his project, which is wonderful. And Mary is like, you're one of the first ups on Strike TV, aren't you? Is it your project, the first up? And you're on episode, what, 27? What are you on to?
Well, we've shot 31, but there's 36 total episodes.
You shot 31.
Yeah.
We will get there. Seth, I loved Seth's bio. He was talking about, you know, you got to realize all these people are fully accredited, but you can get that off of IMDb. I don't want to waste time with that. Seth, I loved, he said he learned how to green screen his thing off of YouTube. He got his training manual off of YouTube. And Mark, who I'll get to later, is known for 20 years. He took a franchise called Star Trek and turned it into a web phenomenon. So we're going to go down the list of that, and then we'll break up into our small groups. So Roseanne, you want to talk a little bit about podcasts and what your history is with this new media concept?
Sure. I'm here representing all of you's fear. Because y'all are not doing this because you don't know how or whether it's worth it or any of that. And neither am I. I've learned all about it because I'm married to him. And he knew all about it because he's a tech guy. And so what happened was when I saw what was going on in this tech world where all these guys were online and they were watching shows and these shows were making money and it was like a little, you know, interior world that only they knew about because they were the number one audience on the web, tech guys. And slowly that's becoming teens and that's becoming women and so many more people. There was a great study the other day that said most Americans watch 6 hours of video time a day. If you are from 12 to 28, that is 4 hours on your computer and 2 on your television. Hmm. If you're above 28, it's 4 on the television, 2 on the computer. Guess which way? Those people are getting older, and the computer screen is much more comfortable to them. The girl who starred in Whedon's Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, Marvelous Thing, did a speech at Comic-Con where she said, we think about Cary Grant and everyone wanting to grow up to be an actor and being seen on the giant screen. She said it was her dream, having grown up watching things on her computer, whether it was video games or whatnot, her dream to appear on everyone's computer. Hmm. So that piece with Whedon was more important to her than doing a major film.
How many people here know the Joss Whedon piece? Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, I just want to make sure that everybody is current here.
Oh, definitely.
What, with what we're saying.
So literally...
They're hip to the lingo.
So I just really think we need to know that. We need to not be scared, and I'll get there too, I promise. So I don't have a show to pitch. I just have this new information that I'm sharing with people that I learned from my husband, and I think we can all get something from that. We're going to hear about all these guys and what they're doing, and then we'll talk later about the different people who are actually making millions during this. But there's never a million people making millions, but we just want to make in the middle. Anyway, so that's who I am. I'm excited you guys all came because I do think what Bill said is true. We all know that. It all starts with what the idea is. And the idea can be transmitted. My favorite thing nowadays is who cares about the quality of the technology? Charlie Chaplin movies looked like shit. Nobody knew anything about how to make movies then, but it was Charlie Chaplin you were watching. The quality of the character and the story he created was worth the fuzzy bad filming. So I think we can move through that, ooh, it doesn't look as good as movies do, because it's what do I really want to watch.
And you will see a whole range of things. I know that there was one seminar I went to where this woman... She financed her own pilot and shot it herself for $50,000 and then, you know, loaded it on the web and stuff like that. I'm not talking about that. We're talking about stuff that we can do, as I say, for the price of pizza for 10 or something like that. Doug, who I'm now taking his podcasting class at UCLA online, he's wonderful in explaining all the technology and just exactly what a podcast is.
Well, you know what's up. What's most scary is podcasting's only been around, well, barely 5 years. I started September 2004. That's when the term was invented. Literally 2 weeks after the term was invented, that's when I started because I am a writer, but I write a weekly column on careers. And I had all this backlog and back catalog. I was writing every week, and so it was just very easy for me to get started. I borrowed some equipment, and away I went. The scary part is, Bill, the term podcasting is already obsolete because... People quickly realized there was a big discussion right on that podcasting just wasn't a good name for it because it seemed to tie it to the iPod. It seemed to do other things. Nowadays, I tend to go much more towards new media. And as Roseanne is always fond of telling me, new media will not be new media after a certain point. In fact, what it's going to become is it's going to become media. Because the thing I'm going to tell you today is kind of odd, but basically, new media is nothing new. We're still telling the same stories. We're still writing the same scripts. We're still doing the same shows. The only thing that's changed is the distribution method. We now just have three or four new ways of getting our message, our stories, our creativity out to the world, and eventually it's all just going to become media. You had radio, then you had TV, then you had movies. Well, guess what? We're going to have podcasting. We're going to have online video. We're going to have social networking. So what I want to get through to all of you tonight is there are basically four pillars to new media, or you know what is not going to be considered new media much longer. First of all, this is, all of these are probably something you've heard about, okay? First of all, online video sharing, YouTube, Vimeo, Vidler, all the different video sharing sites that are out there. That's where we start because, frankly, it's very easy to put a video on any of these sites. You can take your little digital still camera. In fact, you can even take something like this. Shoot video and either upload it or actually send it directly live to any of these sites. Literally with a click of a button in your web browser. The next part of the next pillar is podcasting. And in that way, podcasting provides several important differences from video. First of all, if you're watching a YouTube video, how many people have watched YouTube only to have the video go, you know, kind of stutter through, right? You have to be connected to the internet in order to watch that. You have to be on a laptop or on a laptop connected to a TV or something like that. What podcasting does, it can take the same material, the same stuff you can put on YouTube can also be podcast and brought down to your computer, down to an Apple TV. Have anyone seen the Apple TV? The Apple TV, go to the Apple Store tomorrow. Ask to see the Apple TV. There's one on display in the Apple Store. It's a white box you plug into your TV and a little white remote takes anything you've downloaded, any movies you've purchased or rented, or any podcast you have on your computer and shows it on your TV with a little white remote, okay? That's where we're headed. It's all going to be on the TV. Everyone's got the TV in their home. We've used it for several decades now. Everybody knows how to use it. Therefore, that's where these things are going. The Apple TV isn't the only one. There's other devices out there. Even if you have a TiVo, go poking around in your TiVo menus and see if you have a podcast directory. I can almost guarantee you do, and you can actually stream episodes of various podcasts, including Rocket Boom Live, right to your TiVo, right onto your TV. Okay? So podcasting gives people the ability... Yes, sir? Yep. It's a different gadget, and it's specific to their service. It's basically meant to download to stream movies is what it's for.
We're going to have a Q&A session after this if we can just let them get through it. The big
advantages of podcasting over YouTube or something like that is I don't need an internet connection, and I can carry my media wherever I go. The thing we always said about podcasting, it's what you want, where you want it, when you want it. And I hope you see that's a big difference from the typical YouTube-style experience, right? Third pillar. Live video streaming, okay? Today, with that computer right there, a web browser and a webcam, which my computer actually has one built into it right here, I could start broadcasting live this session right now, okay? That would have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars 8 to 10 years ago. Today, we can do it with the laptop we go over to Fry's and buy. Okay, highly recommended. Now, also, what happens is all these media work together. If I live stream something, I can also record it. I can then have that recording available after the fact as a podcast, or I can put it on any of the video sharing sites. So the media travels over all of these. Final pillar, social networking. How many people are here on Facebook? Fess up. MySpace? Ooh, that's interesting. Twitter? Ah, see, I got you on Twitter. Check out Twitter, twitter.com, trust me. Social media provides the back channel for new media. Just this week, Rick Sanchez on CNN started hosting a show at 3 o'clock Eastern, noon here in California, which integrates Twitter, Facebook, and MySpace directly into the show. He is taking live comments from those streams and talking about them and discussing them right on the show. He did some coverage during Gustav a couple weeks ago, where he started to use it, and they actually turned it into an entire show now. That is how your audience talks back to you. What we used to scream at the television in anger or disgust, we can now tweet back or Facebook back right to the people who created it. And you want to develop that back channel. You want your audience talking back to you because they're the ones you're trying to please. They're your audience. They are all serving, if you will. You live and die on your audience. So you want them talking back to you. And that's probably the final wonderful joy about new media, is it is becoming, a term that I'm using these days is many-to-many media. We've lived for 100 years now with a broadcast style of media, where we go out there, we create something, and we shove it out there, and it's kind of, okay, there it is, and maybe gets written about in the newspapers or review shows or whatever. Now, it's just as easy for our audience to create a piece of media based on our piece of media, which might be based on another piece of media, which might be sent out through 100 different channels around the world. That's the other thing, too, by the way. You now have a global audience. Did you know that? Okay. We're not talking. I've always wondered why I can't watch the BBC here in America. I'm not talking BBC in America. I'm talking, I want to watch BBC documentaries. I love them. Why can't I do that? Well, now I can. I can sit down today on my iPod or on my computer and listen to In Our Times, a show with Melvin Bragg from BBC Radio 4. Absolutely adore it. Comes right to my computer, right to my iPod. I don't even have to go looking for it anymore.
Doug, all right. I don't want to throw you a curve now, but I really like the idea of creating. You know, everybody starts from scratch and creating. Since we do have a web connection here, could you possibly go to Blip TV or something like that and show them some of the demonstrations that you have, so for anybody who doesn't know what they're doing, they can get that information and have an audio-video demonstration of it?
Sure.
Okay?
You want to do that right now?
Why not?
Okay.
All right, just don't forget to plug in the audio.
Oh, you know, I forgot here, too. You joked about the cell phones. And, of course,
you mentioned the cell phones. I immediately picked mine up ago because, guys, this is your TV now. Okay? This is on my computer. This is on my iPod. This is playing live. I can just as easily stream YouTube videos to this phone as well. So,
I was with somebody the other night who had on his cell phone at his house. He had 6 surveillance cameras, which he picked up on his cell phone.
Wow.
And he could see in his house everything that was going on through the surveillance cameras on his iPhone.
Which one were you particularly interested in?
Well, I mean, when you did things like GarageBand, or it doesn't have to be I'm not selling Apple. It could be your PC thing, or when you started about, like, you know, some of the shows that you had of people talking about their interviews, you know, just a little smidgen, and show people where they can get these kinds of things so that they really can see how they can have an audio video demonstration of this kind of information.
One of the things I like to do in my class, Roseanne and I teach our class, our podcasting and new media for writers now. Next semester, it's going to be just new media for writers. We're probably going to drop the podcasting entirely. One of the things we like to do in that is we teach it entirely online, but of course, I wanted guest speakers. Come on, I just want to go. And get the projector working again here. I don't want to touch anything. I think it's going to finish this little thing here and go, but. Okay. Try not to blow you out here. This is a site called Blip TV. It's a video sharing site like YouTube and several others. It has some features that I like to use, one of which is I can upload something here, and I get a nice one-touch player for my website that people can just, if they're visiting the website, just click on it and go. But it also serves up my podcast to my podcasting audience, those people who are already subscribed to me and already looking, you know, expecting video and audio to come down that pipe. Let's see here. Forgive me while I poke around here a little bit. I need to go back a little bit in my list here.
I realize for the audio recording, this is like watching ventriloquism on radio, I guess.
You know, podcast people are used to that. They really just, are. You know, we know what's going on. Okay, here. Here, let's do this one.
Greetings, everyone. Here we are on December 1st, and since I had to do this job anyway, I figured I would screencast it as well so you could get an idea of
this
how
is an
to
example
do
of a screencast
a tape sync
in which you can use it if you're teaching anything.
Now, this was a technique created way back in the days, early days. I think they even did it with acetate records. But basically,
or you can just
make a phone call
the
between
and
two
show
locations.
How you use the program to
each location records its own audio and not the other person. And then the audio is shipped to a central point where it's edited together.
So basically, I'm going through and I'm demonstrating how I
slider
edit one of my
videos. I usually have to trim it a little bit.
I do this for my class so they can.
In five,
four, three, two, one. Now, the reason Rick is giving me a countdown is that he's helping me out with my editing. I know that he's getting ready to talk right there with the countdown. We do that, and so I can just trim it, slide it to the left, and now we should have a nice little intro. Escrow and title insurance. Is being in escrow painful? And what does title insurance really do? This time on Mortgages Made Simple.
Mortgages Made Simple.
That plays my intro.
So that's an example of how I use something like a training exercise, if you will. Now, also out there, there's so many varieties to the types of shows you can create. I mean, we're all kind of habitually thinking in that 15, 30, 60 minutes. Oh, it's got to have a 3-4X director. It's got to have a 3X director. Guess what? Take all those rules, and I won't say throw them out, but really think of why you're applying those rules. Because the fact is, podcasts find their own length. They find their own subject. They can be 5 minutes, they can be a half hour, they can be 20 hours if you really wanted to. It, because we have the flexibility now to basically do what we want with our media, we should take that freedom back. We're actually, early in the days of podcasting, I talked about taking back the freedom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I've got my smiling face up here for you this time. Anyway, so Elizabeth wrote in a great message on the discussion groups about some questions about Levelator and Audacity and so on. So I wanted to try and answer those in a screencast.
And you're sitting in front of your computer
about,
taking
when you
pictures
use Levelator,
of yourself
the Levelator
talking, and that's getting embedded in the other picture
the
of the computer.
My laptop has
all with
what
this.
Should you be sending to Levelator? And the fact is, for our purposes, if you're going to send something to Levelator, you really just want to send the base.
So that's an example of using a training tool. And just very quickly to show you, actually, I want to go back.
Do you have one where the people talk about their project?
Yeah, let me.
This is, like I said, for you to familiarize yourself with how to do it, who's doing what, and really self-teaching yourself. These tools are out there for all of you.
I have a lot of example shows that I can refer you to, too, that are what I consider, you know, we professionals will look at them and go, oh, my gosh, the lighting's not quite right and direction's kind of bad. But the fact is, they're doing it.
I'm
really
Sarah
want you to
Atwood,
look at that.
And I'm Julie Damon. And we're from Nontourage, nontourage.com. We have an audio podcast that we have every week. Mm-hmm. And
a
video podcast. We have a mini sitcom series
shows,
called Almost There.
And I brought them
as
in
as well as monthly
with
vlogs,
them to have guest speaker
we do on
for the
topics.
Class.
Can you show a piece of their show?
Yes.
Can you go to their
otherwise
webcast?
Known as short film.
And they were writer's assistants looking to do their own work and get noticed. So they started writing their own internet show, which got the, one of them's an actress and one of them's a writer's assistant, and it got the actress work. So,
our friend, I have another interview with a gentleman named Grant Pachoco. And Grant does a show called The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. It's actually an audio show, pretty much. But it's for kids, totally family-friendly. And they were shopping that show to the Henson Company. Well, while they didn't sell the show to the Henson Company, what it did end up doing was Grant now does the Henson Company podcast for their website, and he is now a member of Puppet Up, their kind of adult puppet troupe, which performs over here at the old Chaplin Studios on Fairfax? Yeah. La Brea. This is their teaser trailer for Almost There, which was the five-part series that they
We'll just look at a little bit of
I'm just only going to show little bits.
But you can get an idea.
If it comes up. Come on, baby. Trying to think of the best way to contact
they have their own website. I mean, that's what,
it's not coming up.
It's not coming up?
Nontourage.com. Is that
that's right? Actually their audio show. I'm trying to click this teaser trailer here.
You can try Grant.
Oh, you know what? This is a PC and it's hiccuping because it wants to load the whole thing before it shows it. And we don't want to wait for that.
No.
Okay, so no, I'm sorry on that one, Bill. We'll go ahead. Please contact me at welchwright.com. And there are all my shows on the right and the latest video on the left. There are email contacts, Twitter, friend feed, all the social networking. Please feel free to contact me. And finally, one last thing is, and I've talked about this with Bill, one of the things I did a few months ago was I started a new group of my own, totally free group. It's a user group, if you want to use that terminology, called New Media Interchange. It is designed to introduce people who are new to new media in a casual, friendly, non-threatening environment to new media.
Okay.
And we'd love to have you.
Thank you. That's a terrific presentation, Doug. Ken, who helped me put this program together and was my confidant through all of it, is very active in this thing called Strike TV. Does everybody know what Strike TV is? Does anybody know what Strike
TV
is? Okay, so Ken will let us know about Strike TV, and he can go to the computer as well and pull up the beta version of Strike TV, which is supposed to launch, I guess in a couple of weeks. It's an outgrowth, again, of that strike, where writers, WGA writers, got together and formed a distribution outlet, their own Hulu or whatever, called Strike TV. And Mary produced something for them, and Ken produced something for them, and Seth produced something for them, and I produced something for them, and they're going to be screened in, I guess, 6 a week. Is that what they're doing? All right, you tell us about Strike TV and your confessional.
Great. Well, thank you so much. First of all, thanks for everyone coming tonight. I'm thrilled that everyone is here because everyone in this room has this wonderful opportunity, I like to think, through Strike TV to create your own material, own it, and have an aggregator, a place where you can take it and show it online as a place to own it and hopefully make money and take it on up the road if that possibility exists. Here's how Strike TV came about. Really, during the strike, several people, independently of each other, all had a similar kind of idea. Obviously, the issues of new media were central to the strike, and several of us sort of had this idea of, in the last 5 years, there has been this revolution. Film had always been, as Orson Welles said, a very expensive paint box to play in. And now it wasn't. Within the last 5 years, because of digital cameras, which were highly affordable, because of Final Cut Pro, which made editing accessible and not expensive. And then the final piece of the puzzle was distribution. And with the advent of the internet, all of a sudden, all of these pieces were there to radically change the paradigm of film production. And so several of us thought during the strike, we should do this ourselves. And Ian, our sort of head, is here today. And as Ian always said, it's not about saying we are doing this to somehow sort of like rebel against the studios, but rather it conforms more to my embrace of what this social critic Neil Postman always titled a book, "Amusing Ourselves to Death." His basic theory is that Americans can never get enough entertainment, and so. My central thesis is that the avenue of the internet is simply one more way that Americans can feed their insatiable urge to be entertained. And Strike TV came about when a bunch of us, just as I say, sort of independently, said, we should just do this ourselves. Create pieces, own them, and then aggregate them and show them, in some fashion online. We're sort of hooked up through the union. And to me, by the way, Strike TV is a fantastic example of what a union means because independently, I could put my little show confessional up on YouTube or online or whatever, and nobody would care, nobody would watch. But what I firmly believe that Strike TV does is that it gathers together dozens and dozens and dozens of writers from all kinds of different backgrounds. And when we aggregate ourselves together, we are a force that I think calls some attention to ourselves. Essentially, our little arc of history was that we had a seminar in January back in the sort of the height of the strike at the Writers Guild where 400 people showed up. We tried to explore issues of monetizing the internet and also said, and Ian sort of led us in saying, look, here's an opportunity. We want to do the initial phase of Strike TV as a charity. We want to create shows. You will own those shows. We will garner advertising for those shows. Go online as a kind of alternative network. And any profit that we make will go to what has now become the Actors Fund Emergency Assistance, which still supplies emergency assistance to those who, in all areas of our industry, who were affected by the strike. And so we were kind of blown away by the response. We had, I think, over 400 people there at that meeting. 60 people said, yes, we would like to create pieces. And we now have about 50 shows, and including people on the panel who have wonderful pieces. And these shows were created for the first wave of Strike TV, which is this charity function. And because the response was so positive, both from the creators and also because we got all this interest from advertisers, we said, you know, there's probably a business in this. And so we have moved forward. And you have to understand, we're truly just a bunch of writers who have tried to figure this out as business people. And so it's been a huge learning curve, but we have moved forward. Strike TV is now this full-fledged business, with the first phase of it being a charitable function, and phase two moving into a full-fledged business model. I guess I would urge you to consider a couple of things. All of our creators created shows just by their own wherewithal. Some of them are far more ambitious than others. You know, Mary, as you'll hear, and I hope see maybe a sample of, is, you know, has this vast canvas that she has laid out this very large complex story. And some are very modest, like my show. I did a piece for Strike TV called Confessional. It was inspired by a friend of mine who, honest to God, has a business in North Hollywood, which she opened, which was essentially come in and get something off your chest. She's not a therapist or a clergy person. She's a realtor. And she felt this soulful urge to be a listener to whatever people had to say. And I thought, well, that's an interesting job. That's an interesting situation. And so I wrote this very short piece, kind of a two-hander. And I contacted, and I'm sure we all have the friends in the industry. I contacted RJ Vasigli, who's this terrific friend of mine and a great director, George Usher, who has his own business editing and shooting show, mostly industrial pieces, and my wife's an actress, and our good friend David Burke was the actor in the piece. And so I literally, and I borrowed a storefront, and the woman who actually owned the business was able to sort of donate her set dressing, essentially. And so literally, I think I ended up paying George $100 because I felt so bad, because he actually has a business that he makes his living editing, you know, industrial stuff. And I just thought, I can't let him just suck up his entire business. So, you know, Confessional was literally, and it's like a 7-minute piece. But I firmly believe that everybody in this room is capable of doing that. That's the beauty of, as Bill has said, the beauty of this new media is its accessibility, it's its democratic nature. It also invites, as Doug alluded to, a new way of storytelling. And I promised Bill I wouldn't get into this, but later on, if somebody wants to talk to me about a new aesthetic that I think has emerged through online original content, I'd be happy to do so.
Would you like to show any of Confessional?
Well, I would. You know what? I don't know about Confessional, but even though it's on the here, well, I'd love to show. But Ian, I'm turning to Ian out here because I was wondering if we could just dial up the site.
We think it's already on there.
Yeah. It's on there. It's minimized. But I don't know if Confessional's on the site yet. Is it?
Oh,
it's not on. It's not on. But can we just go to the homepage and dial it in? And were you going to show one of your pieces, Mary?
Mary's going to show hers.
I was going to show the trailer, which isn't actually on.
Seth has a DVD of his.
Is there?
You can show an episode if you want. I was just going to show the trailer.
Well, wait for Mary. We'll do that at your turn.
Okay. For those who don't know, Ian Deitchman. Ian is the
He is the workhorse, workhorse of Strike TV.
One of the co-founders.
All right.
Yeah. Here, I'll bring up the homepage.
So if you go ahead, by the way, if you go to Ian, help me here. If you go
strike.tv. Yeah, www.strike.tv. Yeah, right now we're in a private beta. So you can see this is the private beta site right now.
Joe and Kate is a real short one if you wanted to.
We can watch. Sure, we can watch Joe
and Kate. I watched this only about a minute and a half.
So I'll just give you a sense of what the page looks like. These are all different shows. There's With the Angels, which is Mary's show. This is House Poor, starring Mindy Kaling. She wrote with Lester Lewis, both on The Office. Daryl from OnCar. Bob Clendenin from 10 Items or Less. This is by one of the writers from The Daily Show, and Kristen Wiig, Asif Manvi are in it. This was done by Stephen D'Souza. It's an anthology series, the first episode of which stars Timothy Dalton. Bob Newhart returns to the internet. Yeah, it returns to video. We have a pilot, a horror show called Five or Die that Tom Holland, who did all the Chucky movies, among others. And then Life in General, which actually is connected with Greenville General. It's basically a soap within a soap. Life in General is essentially the crazy behind-the-scenes world of a soap opera, and then you can actually watch the real soap opera on Greenville General. So it's pretty cool. And then Joe and Kate, sure, I'll show Joe and Kate.
Yeah,
sure.
I just want to point out, since everybody here is writers, one thing, again, is just we're writers, you own your own content. We hope that NBC says, I want Joe and Kate.
Yeah, I want to pay, you know, and the idea is that really what we also think of Strike TV as is an incubator. I mean, this is a place where you can shoot, you know, Mary has done this amazing job where she shot, like, you know, a real, true, full season of episodes. But a lot of these, if they're multiple episodes, they're three episodes, maybe five. And it's an opportunity to get, you know, and Life in General is really just one. And we have a private beta right now. And, you know, the people who have gone to see Life in General are like, when are we going to see more? When are we going to see more? And, you know, we're trying to get sponsorship to help pay for more, you know?
One important thing to remember is you're not betting the farm on a pilot. You're not betting the farm on one script. You will have the ability under your own auspices to grow a show like it should be grown organically. You learn so much as you do this.
But that's also why the networks are looking to these things, because they don't have to pay anything for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, no, and the only thing I wanted to add about something like Strike T, which is really interesting, it's almost like a co-op where you know, if you need help, if you need a cinematographer, if you need actors, this is great exposure for actors, if you need, you know, some grips, I mean, people help out each other. So you can get people to help you, and you will obviously volunteer your help for their projects. So it is really a cooperative kind of an enterprise.
And, oh, is it going already? Wow, I didn't even... No, this is all private.
Sitting in this booth eating these eggs, we got ourselves a fine feast right here.
What accent is that?
Pittsburgh.
I just wanted to do a Pittsburgh accent.
A buddy of mine's family's from Pittsburgh. They talk like that.
Who, Shots?
No.
Is it Jason?
Mm-mm.
It's
an ex-girlfriend.
You know, you can tell me if it's an ex-girlfriend. I don't mind.
When I say a buddy of mine, I'm usually talking about an ex-girlfriend.
So the buddy who took you to Paris?
Oh, yeah.
The buddy who made you this cup?
Are you mad?
No, I'm kind of relieved, actually.
They're adorable.
And there are several episodes.
Yeah, there's about...
Kate.
There's six episodes of Joe and Kate, and then not all of this is this beta. We're filling things in as we go. We have cast and crew. And yeah, all different kinds of, you know, and then.
And there are several people here. I know Charles Horn, who's in my thing. He also did an animated series called Sketch Tunes. Mm-hmm. And Ken. And then I have Psychobabble.
There's Tony Hand. There's Confessional.
Seth's Tony Hand. Yeah.
So these, and these are all Tender
there's
Morsels.
There's
Sketch Tunes, Tender Morsels, which has is like a band like the Wiggles, except for cats. We've got animation. We've got John's Hand. And what's really cool also, I would have to say, that I think we're doing that, honestly, is very hard to find, is dramas. There are almost no dramas as far as original web material on the net. So it'll be very interesting to see how that works. And I mean, I actually think people are going to get really into them. So basically, though, you asked how do people get to it. If you go to www.strike.tv, you can sign up for our mailing list, and we will, you know, we're kind of sending out access codes. We're kind of parceling them out so that to get people onto the beta site. As we're testing the site more and more, we need more and more people, so we're continually opening it up, and we're probably going to be launching in October. You know, we're basically, you know, kind of gearing up for that.
Cool.
Are self-sustaining web series. That is me. If NBC saw Joe and Kate and said, "Wow, you know what? There's a sitcom," I'm sure Joe and Kate would be thrilled to, you know, take their piece and try to develop it into a sitcom. My firm belief is that there is a different aesthetic about creating original online material. I don't know.
No. I just said.
And that the intention here. Mary, actually, Mary's probably, I think, the best is to explore this new multi-platform way of storytelling that exists as a kind of a purely as its own animal and has its own audience and is its own, you know, self-sustaining.
Yeah.
Some are. And that's where you sort of like build to. It's sort of like you got to take step one before you take step four. So that's where you can build to. And I know, like, I mean, people are all different levels. I mean, the series that I did, I basically shot, this is the camera that I shot with four of them. And I shot it in my apartment, and it was partially, we shot it like Larry David does his show. We worked from an outline, and we improvised it. And they don't run any more than 5 or 6 minutes. And so, like I said, it basically I've done it so far for the price of pizza for 10. And these are good demos for you. I mean, even if you don't sell these, you have something that you can show about your work, not only as a writer, but as a producer, director. Great exposure for actors. I know there are music people that I know of who'd love to do music for these things. It's exposure for them. There's a lot of talent in this town.
We actually have gotten a lot of... we've gotten a couple of music libraries that have contacted us and said we want to donate music for your, you know, for your projects. We've also gotten emails from bands and stuff.
Absolutely. So that's why I'm trying to like say, don't be intimidated by all of this. Take the first step. As I say to my class when I teach at UCLA, you'll be better next year than you are now, and that's okay. That's the way it should always be. Let's do that because we have three more people to go through. The thing I like about Mary that she's going to add to this, besides her own project, which is 108 episodes or whatever, is Mary worked on a show called Lonely Girl 15, which was a web phenomenon. How many people know about Lonely Girl 15? Oh, okay. So Mary, you got it. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, first start out with your experience on an existing project,
okay,
and then we can move on to your original project, which is up on the site, so you can either show it from the site or anything you want.
Okay. I liked it better when the lights were off, but okay. Yeah, let's do that. I'm going to dim them. There we go. There we go. Perfect.
There you go.
So, hi, I'm Mary. I just to kind of give some of you hope who are not really technically oriented people. I am a tech idiot. I'm practically a Luddite, and I didn't even know there were shows on the web until about a year and a half ago, when I got a call from a friend who was in a panic and asked me to help him write a series on a site called FearNet, which is a Sony site, a horror series. And so I did that, and then after that, I got an offer to go and work as the head writer on Lonely Girl 15, which, if any of you don't know the story, basically was like the YouTube blogging version of the Blair Witch Project, where it started out, people believed this was a real girl, and then it gradually morphed into a series. By the time I got involved, the show was more of like an action show than the typical, you know, there were definitely some vlogging episodes, but it was more like, you know, teenagers in the X-Files is kind of what the model had kind of evolved into. And I got an incredible education by working on that. You know, just to have the opportunity to work on something that was already up and successful was really amazing. And they had some very specific ideas about what worked on the web. Some of those I've come to see as absolutely true and have adopted in my own work. And other things I've kind of thought, yeah, I don't so much agree with that one. But I got the opportunity to actually try all that out and figure out for myself what I thought worked and what I didn't. What works for my storytelling, what I think works in general for the medium. And, you know, that was a really incredible experience. One of the biggest things I learned from Lonely Girl was that there are really, in this particular world, there's no edge of the canvas. You know, it's not even like you can color outside the lines, because really there are no lines. You've got your main video, and then there are just anything that you can think of that would enhance your storytelling, you can use. Existing websites. We had a character on Lonely Girl who we wanted to hide a code somewhere, so we made a Match.com profile for that character, and it gave the fans an opportunity to find the code on his Match.com page. You know, things you can use existing sites in that way, or you can create your own sites. We had a pharmaceutical company, completely fictional, called Virtus Pharmaceuticals, and we created a page for Virtus Pharmaceuticals, which had press releases, and it was a very complex and deep site, had a lot of content on it. So you can do things like that. You know, you can take it off the internet completely. When you start to think in these terms, there's really no limit to how you tell your story. You know, it's not just a question of, I have this little box and these few minutes to tell my story in. You can really spin it anywhere you want to spin it. You can let some of your story evolve in the comments. You know, you can have a text post on someone's blog that, you know, and there's some archaeology to be done by your fans, but you also provide ways to track back. There always are going to be two levels of fans for these kind of things, I think, and there are some people who still are very much in the kind of passive viewer mode, who are going to want to watch a show. And then there's people who are going to want to work for it, really like to get involved. They want to talk to the characters. On Lonely Girl, I spent a good couple hours a day interacting on the forums as various characters, you know, and it got tricky. You'd log on as Daniel, and then if you forget to log off and become Jonas, it can be a little tricky. But there's going to be those people who are invested in that way, and then there are going to be people who just kind of want to watch it unfold. So you've got to provide two levels of storytelling. You've got to provide a layer where the people who are engaged more passively can enjoy the show, and then you got to give the people who want to dig a little deeper something to do as well. And, you know, as you're constructing a show, you really can decide how far into that you want to go. You know, I call what I'm doing on With the Angels kind of interaction light, because it, you know, there's not a lot of us working on it. Jonathan Kaplan, who's one of the writers, is here. And by the way, Neil De La Pena, who's our DP, is here, and I could hear him squirming when people were saying that it doesn't matter what it looks like. But, you know, we don't exactly have this big staff that can be writing websites, and you know, I don't know how to make a website. So we keep it pretty simple in how we interact, but we do have one character who has his own blog where he's posted 30 separate videos. So even though the main storyline is 36 videos long, if you want to know more about that character, you got 30 other episodes you can look at over here. You know, so there's ways to engage people and to sort of deepen the experience for people. And a lot of it is just stuff that as you think about your own story that you want to tell, what's going to be the best way to tell that story? You know,
Mary, do you want to talk about how you first started with the angels, how
sure.
that first came to you? Because I think that's the phase that we're all at now,
yeah.
you know, from that germ of an idea and how we developed that.
Well, it started in 1989, actually. I had written a screenplay with a guy named Werner Trishman, who's the arts editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about this girl named Taffy who moved to Little Rock, which to her was the big city, because she wanted to be an artist. And when Strike TV came up, I went to that big meeting that Ken was talking about where there were 400 people, and I was really impressed by something that Ian said, and I probably won't get this exactly right, but he said something, I think it was you, at the end of the meeting where he basically said the last strike showed the showed the networks that they could make shows without writers, and this strike is going to show them that they, writers can make shows without networks. And that really appealed to me, you know.
Ian, you're getting credit for that.
You didn't say that? Somebody there said
Ian
that.
Ian said anyway. That. Yeah. Do we like it? If we liked it, Ian said it.
Whoever said it, it was brilliant. Anyway, I said, okay, maybe I'll do something for this. And I started thinking about this script that we had written years ago, which had, you know, made its way up the ladder, but that ultimately was way too character-driven to actually get made. And it just seemed kind of a perfect fit, because I had sort of fallen in love with that aesthetic that Ken's not going to talk about which is basically first-person storytelling that you can do on the web in a way that you really can't do, doesn't have quite the same effect in any other medium. And I wanted to go further in that direction. And this character, because she was kind of goofy and isolated but also very talkative, seemed perfect for that. So that's kind of that's how the show was born. And I didn't really think it was going to be such an epic task doing, you know, I knew we'd have a bunch of episodes, but there ended up to be 6 main characters, and I really wanted to tie all those stories together, and that's how it ended up to be 36 episodes long. It's just, you know, kind of the, that's how long it took to tell all those stories, and I'm still not actually even sure I'm going to be able to finish it in 36 episodes, but I'm trying very hard to do that, because it's pretty hard to keep grinding at this. But, you know, I come to this with a particular background, which is I was a producer for years. So there are elements of this that are not at all daunting to me because I've already done them before. And my advice to anybody coming into this is to think of what is the thing that isn't daunting to you and kind of come from that place toward this. So it doesn't feel like you're trying to climb this giant mountain, you know? That way you're going to do something that's more genuine to you. It's not going to feel like quite such a struggle, you know.
I think that's great. That's great that you don't try and bite off more than you can chew when you're just starting.
Right. Just, you know, there are things that you're good at, and those are the things you sort of say, what can you start with and kind of build out from there?
Did you
direct, and the only reason I directed really was because it was easier than explaining to someone what I wanted to do. And I had worked with Neil before, and one of the things that I've learned is that this particular style of the show is meant to appear as if the main character has shot the entire show themselves. And so that is very difficult to pull off. It's meant to look effortless, but it is far from effortless. And because Neil and I already had a dialogue about this, because we had done a bunch of other work together, it made sense for me to direct. I'm really proud of the fact that I directed it, but it's honestly not a big, you know, ambition of mine to be a director. So, you know, if you're somebody that's comfortable with that and you feel like you can probably get it across better than somebody else, then I'd say do it. If it's not something you're comfortable with and you know someone who can do it, then get them to do it. You know, it's all about whatever's going to be easier. Another thing that I kind of just wanted to address a little bit is the idea of audience interaction and bringing the audience into your story. It's very important that you understand how you want to manage that. you know, because it will eat your life. You know, so if you decide that you want to do a show where you're really communicating a lot with an audience, you need to figure out where the lines of that are. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself at 3 o'clock in the morning sending MySpace messages to 18-year-old pregnant girls in Arkansas like I do. So there you go.
Would you like to show a little bit of
Yeah, I'd
with
love
the
to
angels?
Actually, I think showing the trailer is probably the easiest.
Is the trailer on there?
It is
or?
On there, yes.
Okay. Now, I think this is going to be one of the first ones up when Strike TV launches. Ian, is that right? Yeah.
That is correct.
It's your premiere week. Yeah.
As of tomorrow, there'll be three episodes on the beta site as well.
Right. And the interesting thing that I think you should take note, which I love, is that with all this stuff, it doesn't matter whether you're a feature writer or a TV writer or both. There are projects that you can do for this new media or non-traditional media, whichever one you call it, that'll work.
You can go. I don't know if I can go full screen in Quicken. Can I? Sorry, QuickTime. View.
Yep.
I don't know how it's going to look in full screen, but
yeah,
full screen.
It might fall apart in full screen, but.
See.
My name is Taffy Simpson. I live in Venice, California. Originally, I'm from Allen, Arkansas. I see all the people on the YouTube, and I just think that there's got to be someone out there who might want to hear what I have to say. I live with Ashley. Do you ever turn that thing off?
He says he's working on a pilot. Trey Allen Gordon, he can help me get a show.
Don't let him know that we've seen his website. This has to feel like a chance meeting, okay? Oh, hi.
Hi.
I always wondered who lived in the penthouse.
You girls live in the building?
Right over there.
Oh, the party pad.
Yeah, sorry for all the noise.
Oh my God, I am so sorry. Ashley, I'm so sorry.
Andy doesn't live here. He's Ashley's friend from college. But the couch pretty much has a permanent dent shaped like, and he's here so much.
What? Taffy's here. Let's get this party started. Let's do it.
Andy hates it that I love Christ. I don't know why, but some people, they're just like that.
You in there making movies with your Bible study group?
I try to keep an open mind. That's what starting a new life is about.
Have you heard of The Secret?
The idea is that our thoughts have the power to create our world.
God created our world.
True, and we're all God.
People here aren't like the folks back home.
You have a beer?
There is a cake in the tub. This is my room.
But it's not like I fit in so good there either. Am I really that different from everybody else?
Thank you, Mary. That's great. And at some future time, only because we're jammed for time now, we will have that non-discussion about the internet and webisodes seeming to have a staple of the first-person narrative as its main form. I just didn't want to get into that because I felt that could be a big discussion, and we really have a lot of ground that we
wanted
to cover.
Can I say one sentence about it?
I think you will.
I'm not a believer that that's the only way to tell stories on the internet. I just want to be really clear about that. And I think you could make a 2-hour romantic drama starring characters made out of Legos if you wanted to, but you just have to make sure that you understand everything about what Legos are capable of if you're going to do that. And that's the same as I would say about anything. You know, if you want to do this kind of storytelling, understand what this kind of storytelling says. If you don't, then understand what else the web can do.
Big discussion. Big
dinner.
Can I
address this one real quick?
Okay. All right, Ken, you're getting your wish.
Mary said something that comes up all the time. It doesn't matter what it looks like, and it makes the DPs just freak out, and I understand this. It does matter what it looks like up until the point where it stops you. from doing it. If it prevents you from doing it at all, throw it out the window. It doesn't. I don't care what it looks like, because it's more important that you do it, because you're going to learn how to make it look pretty as you do it.
Well, not only that. I mean, you can say that depending upon your concept, if you're doing a documentary, the production values can be rougher than if you're doing Batman or something like that. So you try and build that into the concept you create, saying, I don't want to get that ambitious. I mean, the production values in Mary Show are phenomenal. I didn't want to get that ambitious. So I came up with a concept that if it looks crappy, it fits.
You did it on purpose.
Yes, I did it on purpose because I was lazy.
Right there with you.
We're shooting on a Sony PD-150. It's not a high-definition camera. I think we're one of only two Strike TV shows that didn't shoot high-def.
Maybe
just because that camera was free.
Yeah. All right. Seth did his entire series. Was it in your bedroom? You say if you can't shoot in your bedroom, you're not going to do it?
Pretty much, yeah. That became a rule. I did a show. I'm basically the poster boy for Don't Be Intimidated. I'm not bragging, but I have to take the crown for the biggest technology Luddite here. I mean, I really don't know if this is the right side to talk into this. I don't know how I became a father. I don't know how it happened.
That is technophobia. Yeah.
Let's see. So the pitch of my show is, it's so trite. It's been done a million times, but it's about a severed hand who becomes a motivational speaker. And
seen it a million times.
It's great. Yeah. And it's about the British documentary filmmaker who tries to find out the real secrets lurking in his past. So, I didn't know how to shoot anything. I don't even remember how I got this idea of using a green screen, but somehow I wound up on YouTube tutorials, and there are these. Talk about angels. There are these angels who just have tutorials. You can learn to do anything. I can learn to have more children. Finding a tutorial. It's, yeah. But I mean, I remember I had an idea to do this show, and I went to the Strike TV seminar in January, and I was really inspired by it. I mean, tears came to my eyes. I'm serious. It was really. That kind of a life-changing thing where you really see the future or a possible future. You know, I think everybody here wants to hear the thing they want to hear most about, and this is what really inspired me was money. You know, you want to hear like, where's the money, right? So I hope I have permission to say this. These guys were on, there was some guys on that panel. A couple of writers created something called Ask a Ninja. Who knows Ask a Ninja? Yeah. So, that show was done because one of the writers had a ninja costume. And the other guy had a camera or something, and they threw it up there. They put it on YouTube, and it just took on a life of its own. And everybody kept saying, sir, are you making any money? And the writer was like, he'd mumble something like, oh, yeah, 100. And then they'd go on with the thing, and everybody's like, what did he say? 100 what? He made 100 what, And then finally, he says, oh, yeah, 100,000. And then it goes on and on. It's like, what, 100,000 through the life of the thing, whatever, until finally, 100,000 what? He goes, well, 100,000 a month. That's what it's bringing in. And that's like, oh, okay, well, at least there's a possibility that somebody might be able to somehow make some kind of a living here. So screw art. That's what inspired me, But other people said very important things. They said things like, the thing I took from that meeting was, or that seminar was, that the internet is something that isn't happening in the future. It's happening now, and we may not be able to really. Until I saw that, I was going to say, we may not really be able to compete with the studios who do 22-minute episodes or hour-long episodes. I think some people are proving that you can, but I think for most of us, it might be a little bit safer to still stick in the 2 to 5 minute kind of world, and you can still do very interesting things in that format. So when I first had my idea, I was thinking, well, how am I going to shoot this? I've never edited. I don't know what an editing program is. I don't know what a camera is. So I called this guy who was a great editor and director, and I told him my idea. And I said, so do you want to work with me? And he said, no. He said, you should really learn like Final Cut Pro or Final Cut, something like that, and edit it yourself. And I said, thank you. And I wanted to strangle him, because it's like, the thought of me learning how to edit something was just like, he could have just said, you should really learn to do reconstructive surgery, you know? just do it, you know? And apparently there are YouTube tutorials where you can do that now, but... I don't know. Again, I don't know what was driving me, but I didn't even get Final Cut Pro. I got Final Cut Express. And again, I went back to, I thought, how, you know, I can't read a manual. I just can't read a manual. It doesn't make sense to me. So I went to the YouTube tutorials. And again, there are these people just like giving these free tutorials where they just lead you through it step by step. And then, you know, one of the most, regardless of, my film may suck, I have no idea, you know, but one of the most creative, satisfying creative things of my entire life was when, you know, it's about this severed hand that walks around. And one day, I got the hand to walk down this cobblestone street at night, and then it's chased away by these paparazzi. Well, they're off screen, but, you know, still. And I, again, the tears came to my eyes. It's like, if somebody showed me that a month ago and said, you know how I did that? I would have said, I don't know, and I don't care, and I'll never know. But then I did it, you know? It was amazing. So it is. So I'm just the kind of the guy that says that's here to say, even if you have no experience, you can still surprise yourself with what you can do.
Would you like to show us a little bit?
Well, now you know you have to see it. That's the bad part. So, my last thing would be, look, we all write specs, right? We write specs, TV shows or features, and you want to make money, you want to get the job, all that kind of stuff. But a lot of those things, the things you probably have written, are things you wrote because, you know, there was a fire to do them. You know, you really felt that you know, it was a project you fell in love with. I guess when I'm, you know, if I have anything to offer, it's like, well, this is just another medium. This is just another kind of format. Why not do, you know, your 5-minute movie and then and finish it? I mean, the worst that can happen is you did something you were really passionate about and it's done, you know? That doesn't mean we're still all, I think most of us, if not all of us, are still working on screenplays and working on conventional things like this. This is just another palette. It's just another canvas. And
it's another way of bringing exposure to yourself, which I think is really important and in the overall scheme of things.
Yes. So, that's it. Yeah, it's in that green. It was in that green thing. Can you pop it in there?
I mean, you can find help all around to help you do your projects. They'll be there.
Oh, that's one last thing. I mean, I did shoot every frame of this. It takes place all over the world, but I shot it all in my little bedroom office. And again, just one caveat. I am proud to say that the production qualities in this make Mr. Bill look like Apocalypse Now.
Seth, is it this one?
Yes.
It is. Is this a gold one?
Is that like a lot?
Yeah, I
opened it. Oh, look at that.
Who turned off the lights?
Somebody just did.
Does that look right? Tony Doc, is that the name of the film?
Yeah, that should be the only thing there. Yeah, Tony Doc. Hello, I'm Newton Lowe. I make documentary films. Excuse me. I'm currently making one on the subject of motivational speaker Tony Hand. People tell me all the time, Newton, your films are fascinating. Fascinating. And then they say, aren't all your films really about you, Newton?
And I say no. For instance, this one's about Tony Hand, motivational speaker. The disabled, some would say horribly disabled motivational speaker. You should know, in this film, you're going to hear some voices, voiceovers. And I wanted you to be able to attach a face to those voices, that's all. It's not because I want to be on camera, I don't. It's not because I'm a part of the story. I am, a rather critical part. But seeing me, it's really just to make things easier for you, the viewer. And with that said, let's get on with it, shall we?
The reigning king of the self-help gurus is, of course, Tony Hand. His success as a motivational speaker is all the more remarkable considering that Tony is, in fact, just a hand. I don't see my condition as a disability. Sure, I don't have a brain or a face. Well, I'm in good shape. I can do these push-ups all day long. I can do these one-finger push-ups. I can do them on my thumb. And check this out. I studied with Chinese acrobats. I'm not muscling it. This is all about balance. Oh. I guess what I'm saying is, if I can do all this, just think what you can do with the hands you've all been dealt. But despite the cult-like devotion of his adoring fans, questions persisted about Tony's past. Hey, Tony, what about your past?
No comment.
An anonymous tip led me to Saudi Arabia, where for years rumors circulated that Tony had a criminal past. Yes, I arrested Omar. He was picking the pockets of tourists in Riyadh. It's hard to believe now, but that's Tony. He was immediately taken before the judges. The trial dragged on forever, 6 or 7 minutes. After sentencing, I immediately escorted him to the square of surgical justice. Omar was screaming, "Ow, ow, my hand," he cried like a woman. Where? In fact, there was so much commotion, no one noticed the hand. The official hand collector forgot to retrieve the hand. When I looked over, I saw it was gone. It was running through the car dealership and then off towards the hills.
And did you go after it?
Well, of course. I would have, except the whole commotion had already cut into my lunch hour. And if you work through, you are not paid extra.
I thought Tony would never speak to me after that broadcast, but to my surprise, he called me and insisted we talk. On camera, here now are the no-holds-barred interviews that followed.
To see those interviews, tune in for the next installment of Tony Hand. Also next time, meet Mrs. Hand.
Tony likes the way I look, naturally.
There once was a pickpocket.
Oh.
He went to Riyadh.
Had nothing else to get people home.
And he got Sharia. That means they chopped off his hand. But the hand survived. And he came to America.
That's
and
right.
Now it's Tony Hand.
I did.
GarageBand clips?
GarageBand
loops?
You know what? Actually, I altered the GarageBand, some GarageBand loops. But yeah, it's just GarageBand loops, yeah.
That's the cliffhanger. Okay. Now, that's from a technological Luddite. So you can imagine what we all can do. You can make note of your questions now. We'll have a question and answer period for every one of these people when we get through with Mark. I've known Mark for 20 years. When I first was hired to do this syndicated series called Friday the 13th, I wound up on a show in a genre that I knew nothing about. And I said, oh, well, that's really interesting. And at one point I asked the producers, why did you hire me? And they said because my background had been so eclectic, you know, from Dallas to Hill Street to everything else, that they said whenever we figure out what we want the show to be, we know you can do it. Okay. But the first thing I did was I wanted to reach out to somebody who knew that genre backwards and forwards, and there was this book called Twilight Zone Companion. And I said, get me that guy. And that guy was Mark. And Mark has obviously gone on to many other things since Friday the 13th. He's an author. He's a super mentor, along with his wife, a novelist. And he also made the web phenomenon of Star Trek. So maybe you can fill us in on how that came about.
Yes, thanks, Bill. And it's interesting listening to the panel so far, because when I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion, it was to educate myself in how to produce and write television. There were no graduate studies or any studies in that field, and I wanted to learn how to create high-quality television. And studying how TV worked in the 50s, there was that same thing. No one knew what was going to work. They thought it was basically going to be like the Broadway stage, but everyone in the country could see it simultaneously. And so basically, they were just throwing things against the wall to see what would stick, and there was an enormous quality of anybody could come in and try stuff, and then people rose based on their abilities and luck and so forth. So I think it's a very similar period that we're in now. For myself, I think a very important question in terms of approaching internet material is, what do you actually need?
Breaking In Again, a new media panel discussion recorded at the Writers Guild of America, September 9th, 2008. For more information, visit newmediainterchange.com.